Hello, I'm Teresa Ayers.
And I'm Janet Gallen, and this is Love Letters Live.
And we are the Love Letters Squad.
Yes, we are, presenting Love Letters Live. And this is a show about just that, love letters, where people share stories of blessings and victories and challenges and relationships, and then talk about the person who would get a love letter by natural connection, and then we work on that love letter right here. So I'm going to go right to our guest, Noah Griffin, who is a poet, a writer, a composer, a singer, and a lecturer, and a few other things. And I've known Noah for a long time. And I'm going to go right to you. And you've had some connection with KUSF, haven't you?
I have. In fact, I worked here as an instructor between 1972 and 1987. I taught broadcast management here, and I had a wonderful time. And I met Steve Runyon and a lot of folks that were here, then some of whom are still here, and some of them have moved on. I had a great experience with the students and came back a couple of years ago and taught politics and media.
And you're singing.
I'm singing. Yes,
I know that you were singing at the Fairmont for a long time. Where are you singing now?
I sang at the Fairmont for 6 months. I sang at 142 Throckmorton, the Marin County Civic Center, the theater there. I'll be singing at the Raz Room, at the Enrico's on Broadway.
So do you have a website that people could check to find out your schedule?
NoahGriffin.com.
NoahGriffin.com. NoahGriffin. .com. Okay, thank you.
Well, thank you.
And I know I have one of your poems that you gave me years ago. It was on a big poster size. It was quite gripping.
I did a poem on the Tuskegee experiment.
Yes.
And it mirrors the charge of the Light Brigade, because there were 600 men experimented on.
Why don't you just go back a little, experiment, as long as we're talking about it.
Some people may not know what that is.
There was a syphilis experiment at the hospital in Tuskegee on men who had it and men who didn't, and they gave it to men, and just to see how the disease would function in their lives and the physiology. And some of them already had it, but when penicillin was discovered as a cure 10 years later, they never gave it to the men. So this experiment went on for some 40 years until it was brought to light.
Sponsored by
Peter Buxton. Sponsored by the government, essentially.
Mm-hmm. And what years were those?
This was between 1932 and the late 70s when
really?
It was exposed.
That long?
It was given to the San Francisco Chronicle, who thought it wasn't a story. And then eventually Ted Kennedy got it exposed through the New York Times. And the irony of it is, a very good friend of mine for over many, many years broke the story and never even told me that he was the one that had broken the story. Another friend, Jay Hooker, who was an artist who came up and did an art show and asked me to do a poem on these men. So what I did was I took the Charge of the Light Brigade as a template for what I did, because those were 600 men who were sent to their deaths. So line by line, stanza for stanza, it perfectly scans, but it tells a different story. And the artwork that we used was, or that Mr. Hooker used, was one of the men being examined at the time, against the backdrop of the clinic that still exists with the paint peeling and that nobody goes into any longer. So it was a superimposition on a superimposition. And so right now that hangs in the gallery there at Tuskegee and is for sale for the benefit of the gallery there.
It's a really gripping piece based on a really horrible, horrible incident.
Some of the survivors were actually brought to the White House and the Clinton administration and given medals for having survived that. And it was we're sorry for what happened.
You have to be grateful for the people who bring these stories to light, finally.
Yes. Yes, you do, because it's a part of our history that has been buried, and you can't heal it until it's unearthed. It has to be exposed for what it is and for what it was.
And people can read this on your website also, I imagine.
We're gonna make a place for it.
Oh,
right,
please.
Now it's primarily music, but we're seriating it.
Okay.
So different aspects of my life will
That's
be there.
That's good to know. So tell us about you and how your life has been, let's say, in the last 10 years.
Well, the most challenging thing that's happened to me in the last 10 years was January 18th, 3 years ago, I had a stroke that completely and totally paralyzed my left side. And the fortunate thing was I had met a woman 3 weeks before whom I called up.
Oh,
it's amazing how your mind focuses in times of crisis. Who can I call? Who will help me? How can I get out of this situation? And I think I'm religious, and I think the Lord helps me. So I made that one call to the person whom I knew was going to help me. And within the 3.5-hour window, she was able to diagnose it on the internet, figure out what it took as an anecdote, call a doctor friend of mine who
wouldn't let me
lie to do.
How was she able to? Wait, can we go back a minute? Because I think for people listening, Teresa, you think, just to help people know something more, let me just say that we need to have this as a television moment. You're a very young man, which people can't see. So that you said you had a stroke 3.5 years ago.
Well, you're very kind. I was 59 when I had this stroke. Actually, but 59,
still,
right on the edge of my 60th birthday.
That's young.
I think that's young for a stroke, as the public tends to think
perceived.
Of a stroke as happening to somebody who's very, very old at
I
the end.
I was overweight. I was stressed. I was in a job for 35 years in jobs that I didn't really want to do. I started off in life to be an entertainer, to be a singer. I got kind of waylaid because I had the opportunities to go to law school. And for 35 years, I was in politics, government, and media. Now, the media was close, and I don't mind the media. But what I really enjoyed doing is singing. I enjoyed writing. But I never had enough nerve to do it because I didn't think I could make a living at it. So what would happen is stumbling blocks would be put in my way. I failed a year of law school. I never got by the bar exam. I did other things. I wanted to do everything I could
because
to
your
gum
heart
up the
wasn't
works.
In it.
My heart was not in it. Yeah. I remember singing at church once, and the pastor of our church, who had been dean of a college and had seen thousands of students over the years, said something to his wife, and she laughed. And I said later, "What did he say?" He said, "There ain't an ounce of law in that boy."
Ain't an ounce of law in that.
He was absolutely right. I got the same grades Cole Porter did at Harvard Law School my first year, but he had enough sense to move into music. I stayed in a career that I shouldn't have moved out of. So long story short, for 35 years, I'm in something I shouldn't be in.
So the dissatisfaction is bubbling chemicals.
My marriage was breaking up. Oh. I was living in a home with a wonderful 80-year-old woman who rented me a room in her home. My blood pressure was sky high. I was overweight, and I woke up immobilized on my left side. I drove my car to where this woman lived that I had met 3 weeks before, and we'd had this romance for the next 3 weeks. She put the symptoms in the internet.
Oh, I was going to ask how she diagnosed it. Who did you call? Uh-huh.
Put the symptoms in the internet, figured out what it was, took a chance of giving me an aspirin. Because if you give an aspirin for somebody who has a bleeding stroke, it's the wrong thing to do.
Right.
If you give an aspirin for somebody who has another kind of stroke, it's the perfect thing to do.
Okay, can we say that again? Because I think this is important for the world to know. So you called someone who was a 3-week sweetheart.
Yes.
It's not like you called a nurse or an emergency right away.
No.
You called her, and she had the intelligence and calm to get on the internet and type in your
symptoms
and come up with a diagnosis.
With a diagnosis.
Listen, everybody. Yes, okay.
Now,
and
like
then
later
the
learned,
aspirin.
If you can't smile, if you can't put your hands above your head, if you're not making sense, your speech is slurred, the aspirin thins the blood.
Yes.
With the right kind of stroke. All I wanted to do was sleep, which was the worst thing that you could do, because you'll either not wake up or you'll wake up permanently impaired.
Oh, my.
So what she did was call a doctor friend of mine whom I trusted, who advised me, do not sleep, get to the hospital. She bypassed one hospital because she thought I could get better care at another. It was in the middle of morning drive traffic. Mm. She could see literally the life draining from my eyes. She got me there to the hospital. They immediately took me in. Within 3 days, most of the functioning on my left side returned. I still have some residual numbness, but all of the strength is there. And since then, it took me a year and a half to realize that I'm responsible for my own health. I've lost 65 pounds through a 12-step program through FA. Monitor my food addicts in recovery.
Uh-huh.
And I monitor my food on a daily basis so that I don't go back to that unhealthy lifestyle. And I've switched careers. She asked me, what is it that you want to do with your life? I told her. She said, do it. We're both in our 60s. I was separated at the time. As soon as my divorce became final, we went up to Las Vegas and got married.
So
I've never been happier.
You knew this was the right person.
I knew this was the right. She had been divorced for 33 years. She'd raised her daughter on her own. She was a former Calvin Klein model. She's absolutely brilliant. She had a three-month tolerance for relationships, and she was on to the next one. And she said, I got under her radar.
Oh, I can.
Because of the stroke that she felt she needed to take care
of. Oh, whose radar wouldn't you get under? Look at you.
She is absolutely wonderful. She's
oh, that's
she's
so, I'm
the
so
one I want to
happy
write
to hear that. That's so nice.
Well, a couple of things. One,
sure.
Lest we be accused of giving medical advice over the air, and we're not qualified to do that. If you're having symptoms like this, you probably should go directly to an emergency room.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I'm not telling you. Please.
Oh,
you're absolutely
this worked
right.
For, this worked for you in a number of ways.
It worked for me. I have a friend who had a stroke, and they did not. They took him directly to the hospital. Aspirin would have been the wrong thing.
Yeah.
However, get to the call a doctor. Get to the hospital right away.
Right.
They usually happen in the middle of the night. You've got a 3.5-hour window, generally.
Uh-huh.
But of those things that I talked about, if your speech is slurred, you can't put your hands over your head, you can't...
Something's wrong.
Something, you can't smile, you have a crooked smile, there's something wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And you should seek emergency help.
Thank you for saying that, Teresa. This is, right, no way an indication of medical advice. But one person's story has some really good information in it, and that's what it is. I mean, the business about aspirin is good for one kind and not for the other is scary enough because you don't know what kind it is.
And don't wait. Don't hesitate.
Right, yeah.
Don't think, oh, I'll go tomorrow, I'll go tonight. You know, go in right away. Even if you don't have insurance, go in right away.
Exactly.
Because it could be fatal or infirming if you don't.
Okay. Right. Thank you.
So it was, and so, again, you know, and ironically, shortly after that, 3 months after that, I had a near-fatal car accident. And then right after that, I had a prostate cancer scare. And then shortly after that, I had a hernia operation. So I think it was built up for all these years not doing what it is I'm supposed to be doing with my life. My grandfather was a minister, and he was a pamphleteer, among other things. And one of the pamphlets that survives is Making a Life That Counts. And then he has a quote from
that?
A fellow named Smith. Do in life what you are intended to do, and you will succeed. Do anything else, and you will fail.
Yes.
Now, the irony is, what is it that you're supposed to do? I think deep in our hearts, each one of us knows what we want to do, mm-hmm. but we're too afraid often to do it.
Yes, and look at how long it took to accept, to open the gift box.
And everything's a gift. I thought, oh, the music that I have isn't as worthy as the law that I took. And music that I have isn't as worthy as the government. It isn't as worthy as the politics. It isn't as worthy as the media.
No.
It's as worthy as anything.
But you know something? I think so many of us were raised with the message that we are here to make the world a better place. So law and government and things that change the world in big ways. But music makes the world a better place.
It unites people.
Yes.
Oftentimes politics
and speaks for
people
who can't speak so well for themselves. That's why when we hear a song or a piece of music, it's so gripping because it says just what we're trying to say.
Governments have come and gone. Laws have come and gone. Great pieces of music, great pieces of art live forever.
That's right. That's
so
right.
Who's to say what's... Longfellow once said, nothing useless is or low. Each thing in its place is best.
Yes.
And what seems but idle show strengthens and supports the rest. It's all worthy. It's
thank
all
you.
Worthy.
So I was going to save this question for the end, but I have to ask it now. What advice would you give to young people who are starting out and kind of wavering about, should I do this, should I do that? My parents think I should do this. My professors say I'm good at that, but that isn't me.
Follow your bliss. Follow your heart. I'll give you an example of what I said to my older boys about college. Write down all the pluses and the minuses of each institution. Then when you finish that, go with your heart.
Mm-hmm.
Because how does the higher power speak to us except through our intuition, through our hunches, through those quiet moments when we know, I really feel like I want to do this. Not what it adds up to be, not what somebody else tells you to be. Do what Emerson said, what is new in you is new in nature. Envy is ignorance. Imitation is suicide. We must, for better or worse, take ourselves as our own portion. So do rely on yourself, on your own intuition.
Even if it's tough.
And you know what he said? It's interesting. Before he died, it was required reading that you read Emerson. He said, I don't want you to do what I say. Read what I say, and if it resonates with you, fine. If it doesn't, make your own path. Make your own path, and you will be supported in that. George Burns, who is not known as a philosopher but a comedian, said, I'd rather be a failure doing something I love than a success doing something I hate.
Excellent advice.
Yes, I like that a lot. Yes.
And here's some more advice for our listeners. Please tune in every week to this program, Love Letters Live. We're here at this time and hope that you join in. You can also visit our website, www.loveletterssquad.com, and catch all of our past programs.
And that's LoveLettersSquad.com. And there's a lot offered there, and you can take a look. So now let's go back to you. And I know you have a love letter that you're going to write to someone. And so let me just say, who gets the love letter today?
Meredith Browning Griffin, my wife.
Okay. How long have you been married now?
We counted 3 years because
we met on
New Year's Eve. And we both stood up because of the floods. And we met, and the people that she was going out with said, why don't you come anyway? The people I was going out with said, why don't you come anyway? The people actually didn't stand us up. They stayed home because it was flooding. And we met at 11:15 on New Year's Eve. 3 weeks later, she saved my life. 6 months later, we're married, and we've never been happier.
Okay, so have you written her a love letter before?
Not really.
Okay. Now, what does not really mean?
I've written her notes.
Okay.
A lot of different notes. I've written her, certainly when I've been away on the internet, but just to sit down and say I love you and why I love you.
Okay. So that's exactly what we like to see people do, because we have seen, and I'm sure you would know this, that internet, perfect, there's some problems. Can we talk about email for 1 second? The trouble with email is that a love spurt on your screen is a wonderful thing, make your heart stand still and your eyes just swim, but it's not permanent like a love letter is. The other person has to turn it on and, you know, call it up and then print it out and make sure there's ink in the printer and do a lot of work to get that love note. And it doesn't have your signature. Your hand has never touched what she's touching. It's not the same. It's good, but it's not the same as a gift of a love letter. So let's talk about, will she be surprised?
I think so.
Okay, good. So let's just start with, what do you call her?
Meredith.
You call her Meredith. Okay. Mm-hmm. So.
Or sweetie.
Uh-huh. Okay, so you have a choice there. Okay. So what are three things we like to start with? Like, what are three things that you most want to tell her? And it can be about her qualities, physical, emotional, spiritual, what she's done in life. It doesn't matter. Anything at all. Three things most that you want to say to her, whether or not you've said them in person. And
how much I love her mind. She is an extraordinarily gifted person intellectually.
Mm-hmm.
She is loyal to the truth above all else. She's inwardly beautiful, which reflects on her physical beauty. She looks to be 20 to 25 years younger than she is.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not just because she takes care of her skin. It's because the inner beauty shines on the outside.
And genetic good luck, probably.
Her mother died early. Her mother was very... She's outlived both of her mother and her father. But she... I really do think it's the inner beauty that radiates outward, and her compassion for others. There was a situation where someone asked me for a loan, someone that we didn't want to necessarily, we don't have a lot of money. And it occurred in a week when something else was going on. She wrote out a check to me, and she said, go give this to this person. And tell that it's not a loan, it's a gift.
Oh.
And you will feel better.
Mm-hmm. And it didn't take away anything from you?
Even
though you didn't have a loan.
It showed me how wonderful a person she is.
Yes. Okay, so this is five wonderful things you said. Mm-hmm. Now, I mean, that's fine. You can do. We actually had somebody here who did a wonderful show, and it was 110 things he loved about his wife. Just specific. It was gorgeous. But this probably is 110 things, because when you fill in the details of each of these things.
Yeah.
So what we like to do is encourage everybody who writes a love letter to jump into the specifics, because these are all wonderful. I think the real gift is that you notice the specifics.
Well, I'll tell you the specifics about her mind.
Oh, that's exactly under
first,
each thing.
The first time that I went to her apartment, I was amazed at the number of books that she had. I always love to look at the books on the person's shelf to find out what kind of a person they are. What are their, how broad are their interests? What subject matters appeal to them? When I saw history, I saw philosophy, I saw biography, I saw self-help books, I saw the whole gamut of things that I would, some of the exact same books I had in my own library, some of the places in my own inward journey I would like to go. And I said, this is a fascinating person right there. So that was the first thing that bonded me to her. Ironically enough, she thought I was just a singer and I was fling material because she met
fling
me when
material.
I was...
Wait, can we repeat that?
Yeah, I was singing. And so she thought that I was, you know, the band singer and, oh, he might be fun to go out with. And the next day we were at an event with the former professor here, Kevin Starr, who started shooting me all these softball questions, which made me seem really smart because he knew I wanted to impress this woman.
Oh, good.
And she said, you're more than just a singer. And so between her library and Kevin giving me these easy questions, she realized I had a mind too. So.
Well, also, you realize that she had a mind and a heart open enough to see this other right away. That's important,
isn't
it?
That's what she always says. Not everybody gets you, Noah. I get you because everybody else wanted to put me in a little box. Oh, you can do the law, or you can do the government, or you can do the politics. You should be, or you can maybe even do corporate. You should be doing that. She appreciated me for what it is that I am, an artist, a singer,
yes,
a writer. And she said, please do it, particularly
but,
after
but
the
also saw that you had all these other accomplishments intellectually and yes, areas that were alive in you.
But let me be me and encourage me to be me.
Yeah.
And I think we fall in love with people who see ourselves in some way as we. What did Burns say? Would by God the gift to guide us to see ourselves as others see us.
Yes. So what? Okay. So this is good. That's definitely about her mind. What? How is she extraordinarily intellectually gifted?
She's a voracious reader,
mm-hmm.
And the thing I like about her, the depth of her intellect and knowledge, is she has a practical aspect to it. She can read something and apply it immediately to her life, and it's there. Her powers of analysis are superb. I've been in politics all my life. We wound up taking the train as a belated honeymoon to the inaugural. We would watch... We 5 hours of politics every day. We'd be on the internet for 2 hours in the morning. We'd watch shows from 3 until 7 in the evening. And she was as astute an observer of the political scene as anybody that I know, who'd never really totally been absorbed in politics before. And I've been, worked for Dianne Feinstein. I worked the press secretary of Frank Jordan. I've written political columns for both the Independent in San Francisco and the Hearst Examiner.
Mm-hmm.
And it's great to have that in common.
Yeah.
Just over the last 3 years, she's developed that.
So it's another way that she gets you, that she understands you.
I just came back from Lincoln's bicentennial. She's got books on Lincoln in her out. And she's amazing. She's amazing. She absorbs things very quickly.
Does she have a career?
She spent high-tech publishing. She was in for maybe 30 years or so.
Mm-hmm.
And now half of her career is managing me and half of her career is doing the same. And I'm just, the career's just taken off as a result of her management and encouragement.
Oh, that's wonderful. So you're doing more in singing.
I went off to Westfield State College last fall to lecture on Lincoln and the Gettysburg Address. I'm giving lectures this spring. I've been to... New York to sing, to Boston, to Las Vegas. I've sung extensively around the Bay Area, and I've recorded. So it's all due to the encouragement that she's given me.
But you said management also.
Yeah, she jokingly calls her company under new management. Since it's my third marriage.
Oh, I see. Okay, but she does she actually, I'm just curious, help with booking and keeping...
Yes.
She really is
managed.
So it's not just encouragement, it's what you said before, the practical.
Right. She negotiates. She gives me advice on, even sometimes what songs do, somebody's producing a jazz demo for me. And her mother was a professional singer, mm-hmm. and Johnny Ray was her godfather.
Oh.
So she has a really good ear for yes. music, and she said, I think these three songs would be good for you to do, and they're perfect for me to do. Two out of three, the producer said, absolutely, and the third, if we can get a good arrangement.
Where did you find this gem?
There she was at Paradise Bay at 11:15 in Sausalito when I walked in with my friends, and she looked at me, and I looked at her, and there it was.
There it was.
And I wasn't going to get remarried again, and neither was she. It was the most ironic thing. And here we are. And this is at 60 and at 63 now. Well, 63 and 65 now, but this was it. I said, what's the oldest guy you'll date? She said, oh, between 50 and 59. I said, I'll be 60 my next birthday.
She Hurry up.
She says, you're my boy toy. I'm 62. I thought she was 45.
That's great. This is just all wonderful. This is going to be a wonderful letter. So, and you say she's loyal to the truth. That's
she
kind of
will,
could
if you
stand
don't
by
want
its
to
own.
Know, if you don't want to know what she thinks, don't ask her. And oftentimes she'll volunteer it, and she says, I'm from New York. Now, truth without compassion is brutality.
Oh.
But she will. She said, now, sometimes you might say to me, now, I might have said that a different way, Meredith. But she tells you what she thinks. And so you can believe what comes out of her mouth.
Yes.
I'm too often, I try to be tactful. I try and be a people pleaser. I try to hold back. Now, sometimes you don't have to say everything that you think. But if you ask her, she will tell you what she thinks. Mm-hmm.
Well, I believe in that really strongly. Like, there's really no excuse for saying something that isn't true. You can keep your mouth closed.
There you go.
But if you're going to open it, why have something not true come out of it?
My good friend
exactly.
Tom Fleming passed away a couple of years ago at 99. He was the longest-running black columnist in America. He wrote for the Sun Reporter newspaper. And I told him, Tom, you don't have a wrinkle on your face, and the reason that you've lived as long as you have, he said exactly what he thought. And people would make excuses for him. Oh, that's just Tom. But he held nothing back and didn't create any.
Well, that's cute
problems.
That you call that an excuse. He's just Tom. I think that's the explanation more than the excuse. I mean,
That's why.
Well, and there are different ways to say things. You can say the truth in unkind ways, or you can also say it in kind ways.
That's right. Always catch kids doing
yes.
what is right and then mm-hmm. say, you know, if you're criticizing, I've been criticized on my singing, critiqued. You know, Noah, you did that just great. Now, I would like you to do
uh-huh.
this.
Yes.
And that goes a lot better. Boy, that's really bad.
Yeah, of course. What are you thinking?
Well, and then, you know, it's the same in letter writing, by the way. It's the issue is you want to get it read. You want to get it heard. And if you do something icky, already the person listening isn't going to read it or isn't going to listen. You don't have the attention you need to get the improvement. So
you're
that's
right.
good advice, what you just said. I like that. So let me ask you something. Now, this I've just been writing down mm-hmm. what you've said, and I tend to do that because I know for myself and others that when you say something beautiful, you cannot quite maybe remember exactly what you said later. So I'm going to give you all these things you said just
okay.
so you can have the notes. I like playing secretary. And what kind of stationery are you going to use?
I probably use blue stationery.
Say why.
Yeah, light blue stationery. I love blue. It's my favorite color.
Okay. So then when she gets that, she'll know it's an indication of you. Because, you know, you can do either way. You can choose a stationery that's her favorite color, or theme, or yours, or something between the two of you. So that's a nice thing. That'll say, hi, it's me here right away, won't it? Okay,
yeah.
Good. And how will you get this love letter to her, given that you live with her?
I'll probably
Some
put
choices.
It on her pillow.
Okay.
I'll probably put it on her pillow, maybe with a few rose petals around it.
Oh, that's very sweet. I like that. There's so many ways to do this when you live with somebody, and Teresa and I kind of favor mailing it anyway.
Oh, that'd be funny.
Because the gift on your pile of gich that we call our mail today is such a treat and such a thrill to see, because you don't expect that anymore. People don't get enough of these, and we're hoping to change that. But leaving it on a pillow with roses around it's also beautiful. So, and maybe this won't be your only one. Maybe
it'll start me writing.
Yes, yeah. And you're a writer anyway. Isn't this a lovely way to do it?
Yes. Yes, it is. It's
so you have to find a nice, quiet place so you can just be alone with your thoughts. And we say that's a real luxury, to bathe in the positive.
You know, every morning I get on my knees for half an hour to meditate, and it has given me so much inner peace. So I should do that around this as well.
Yes, because that's a really nice point, writing a love letter as a meditation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
for people who can do that or do that's wonderful. So if you do leave it on her pillow with rose petals, where will you be when she finds it?
Probably, I should be outside.
I should be gone. Someplace else.
Now, but what were you going to say? I know I'm pantomiming.
Well, she spends a lot of time down in her office, and it would I would like to be upstairs rather than be with her.
Okay, that's what I was.
Yeah, I should not.
If you felt that, because even though you wrote it and you know every intimate detail, and by the way, you might want to say things even more intimate. That's up to you. Mm-hmm. Make notes first. Reading is private. Reading a love letter is private. You don't know what she's reading. It may be more than you've said. So that's wonderful. Okay.
That's fascinating.
So, and we never write a love letter for what we get in return because it's a gift. You just give a gift. But if you get some really delicious response that you can share with us and that will teach more to our listeners, would you let us know?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
This has been a real boon.
Isn't this fun? I just love it.
Wonderful.
Well, thank you so much. And to all our listeners, there were so many good pieces of advice and wisdom and all in here. If you'd like to listen to it again, you can find it on our website at www.loveLetterSquad.com. It's time to sign off for today, but we hope you'll join us every week at this time.
And please remember, if you think you need to wait for a special occasion to write a love letter is a special occasion. Mm-hmm. So from the Love Letter Squad, Janet
and Teresa,
bye.
Bye.